Happy Friday. It's the end of yet another week of Political Perspectives on WFSU, and we are so glad that you have joined us to be a part of the fun as we try to keep everyone informed on the candidates and the issues and the various races that are facing voters in Leon County during this incredible electoral cycle with, I believe we said, what, Dee Dee, 60-some people who are running for public office in a multitude of different races, and that's why we're doing the daily Political Perspectives here on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks again for tuning in our direction via TV and radio and online. And before we begin, a reminder that you are always invited to be a part of Perspectives via phone and email. 414-1234 is the local number in the greater Tallahassee metropolitan area. 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address, or you can zap us a tweet here at WFSU Perspective. This episode telecast at 7:30 Eastern Time this evening on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. And you're also able to see it online at our Perspectives page, which you can find at wfsu.org/elections2016. The Leon School Board District 4 race is in the offing for our Perspectives consideration this morning. And we will go around the table. We will get a brief biographical or autobiographical sketch, since you guys will be actually doing the heavy lifting on that, from each of our contenders, and how your background positions you to do the job. So let's start here as we go around the table with Tally Gaynor III. Mr. Gaynor, thank you so much for coming. A little bit about your background and how that would influence your participation on the school board.
Tom, thank you for having me today. Tally Gaynor, I just kind of would say I'm a husband and father of four and a husband of one, a lovely wife, Carly Gaynor, married for 16 years. We resided here in Leon County about 6.5 years ago. We came here with a family. And the truth is, I'm a passionate parent with a purpose. I say that foundationally for people out there to really know that I believe that it is time for parents at the heart of the matter that are in the trenches with children in public schools in the district that we serve to represent the decisions that are made. My background, I have been a public school educator. I taught in Hillsborough County, but also most recently I taught at a charter school here for about 2 years. The school did, there were some changes there at the school that caused it to close down, but I did not stop my pursuit in working in education. I also have been a substitute teacher for the last couple of years, just kind of seeing and surveying because my full-time employment in business, I also am a radio as well through another station, faith-based. I'm a minister, and I just believe in the fundamentals of working families coming together and making decisions that are right for our children. For me, my background that alludes to me in this particular county is that you need people that maybe are not so policy-driven. I would say policy is what our job is, I understand, as a school board. But at the same time, you have to have people that are really connected to the complete picture of Leon County. And I feel that as a school board member representing District 4, not only will I be able to resonate with the children and the lives that are in our district, but I believe that will also provide a positive bridge throughout the county. I made the hard decision to run for office. Soft decision came 2 years ago when the charter school was closing down, and we had about 400 families and about 50 graduates at this charter school that was closing in Leon County. And I noticed in that graduation that none of our local school board members or elected officials at that graduation for whatever reason. And it really touched my heart. And I said, you know, if I could run, I would have ran then. But at the time, it wasn't time. I probably was a little too energized to want to run. But a couple of years later, last year, I had a couple of significant events, and one being with my own personal son, that began to go through some motivation and some challenges. And being an African-American father in a predominantly white community of District 4, that's my reality. But my son began to get discouraged, and he felt that he couldn't go back to seventh grade. And so I had to homeschool him for about 6.5 months. And then during that time, I got involved in the community out there in District 4, talking to homeschool parents, talking to privatized parents, and saying, what happened? Why did you make the decision? I know why I made it. And it was because I needed to restore my son's faith in himself and then also faith in the public school system. And parents began to share the same sentiments. And so after 6.5 months of homeschooling my son, I didn't give up. I went back to that school. I worked with the teachers and staff, and we created a learning plan for my son. And I'm just so glad to say that I was able to get him an in-school mentor and show that he was able to finish from a public school in eighth grade, moving on to high school with a renewed confidence that public school can work. And so with that type of internal drive, I decided to say, you know what? What if other families could have a passionate parent like myself representing them at the school board level? I think last election, there was a teacher who came out of the classroom to get on the board. You now have a principal and others that are stepping to the plate. And I just say, now is the time for parents to come to the table. And I feel that I can be a great representation of that for our families in District 4 and throughout Leon County. And once again, this has been an exciting time. My platform is very simple. Restore faith in public schools, involve families in key decisions that matter most, and empower and equip our students to lead and succeed. That's a simple platform, but I believe in time I will continue to be able to unlock and unveil the vision of changing lives here in Leon County. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaynor. Really appreciate that. Right next to you, Patrick Neil Cannon joins us here in his run for Leon County School Board District 4. A little bit about yourself, sir, and how that would inform your participation on the school board, if that's what the voters want.
Absolutely. My thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I came to Tallahassee here for school, as many of the Tallahassee residents here do, and wound up staying. Married a wonderful local girl who is almost related to everybody in the next county over. Can't complain. She's really brilliant. And I've just really fallen in love with the city of Tallahassee, and as well as the Leon County area. I've decided to make it my home. My wife and I, we've been married 7 years, and we bought our house 4 years ago up in District 4. And it's just been a wonderful area. And over the years, I've been involved with a number of educational items. My particular background is in disability rights and students with disabilities. For the past 3 years, I've been serving on the Florida Rehabilitation Council, which oversees vocational rehabilitation under the Department of Education. Its main purpose is to help people with a disability to become employed. Every dollar spent by this agency is $10 back to the economy of Florida. One of their aspects is also transition students, and there's certain federal legislation that's changed that allows more funding for transition students with disabilities that I'm sure most counties aren't aware of. So, you know, providing that extra funding within this county and other counties within the state could just be so beneficial to that particular population. But what's driven me most about this past few years is the accountability and the fiscal spending on the school board, by the superintendent's office, and it just immediately being approved by the school board. And that's really kind of one of my platforms that I want to drive and that I want to bring to the school board, is to not rubber stamp all the recommendations, to maybe go into more depth, maybe not approve it in an immediate meeting if there needs to be more background, more questioning, you know, not so much to deter the process, but to allow that open transparency, you know, to where you get the school board asking questions, seeing more of the line item, items within a budget that could catch problems that would look bad in the future for the school board, which I feel is what's brought us to the current state and rhetoric that's been going on within the school board. But I'm very passionate about education. Being a former student with a learning disability and going through the ESE program in the state of Florida provides me an interesting aspect of it. I've been able to overcome my learning disabilities, and I say overcome by adapting them so I can still be a full capable person. I have my degree from Florida State, focused in political science and specifically state and local governments. And budgeting, and that's some aspect that I know I can bring to ask those questions, to bring to light, hey, could this be done better or more efficiently, and to allow the people within Leon County to see that transparency.
Thank you, sir. That's Patrick Neil Cannon, who along with Tally Gaynor III are the challengers in this particular race. We also have an incumbent, a longtime school board member, D.D. Rasmussen. Welcome, ma'am. A little bit about you and, again, how you would bring that to another term on the school board, if that's what the voters decide.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for having us. I so appreciate this show and all the support that this community gives to the Leon County school system, and I'm honored to be here and to talk to you about that. My background, as you may recall, or most people might know already, I spent the first part of my career, 15 years in the state capitol. So at the highest levels of state government in legislative and executive branches, working at that time with the governor and cabinet when they were the State Board of Education, including the Senate Appropriations Committee for a bit. So my first 15 years and a master's degree in public administration, I think, positioned me well for the business pieces of this job. In addition, I've spent the last 15 years of my career in higher education, working with college and university presidents around the state, looking toward workforce development, realizing what our colleges and universities need and expect from our students who are college bound. And so I think that puts me in another sort of unique position. So I have the public administration piece and the higher education piece, but predominantly, I'm a mom. I have three children. I started when they were little on this race. They've all gone through Leon County Public Schools, so I've been an active parent in our school system for another 15 years, which adds up to more years than I'm old. But anyway, it's been a great ride. And the reason I'm running again, to tell you the truth, I didn't really think I would after I just thought a couple of terms would be my contribution. But I've been just compelled under the current circumstances. A number of people have come to me and said, there's just too much change. We need you steady at the helm. I think people who would – it's interesting. I've heard the comments about rubber stamp, and I can see how you might think that. If you watch the school board meeting, we don't have a lot of vitriol. We don't have a lot of acrimony. But it's the reason that I'm running again, because – my background, having worked with the governor and cabinet as a collegial body, I understand processes. I understand systems. It takes a long time to build and earn the trust and the relationships that I have with the staff. Remember, the staff, the entire district staff report directly to an elected superintendent. So having a board as sort of a check and balance is a bit uncomfortable sometimes. And so my style is just not to publicly chastise or ridicule or question so much, but to work behind the scenes to respectfully get to solutions. So whenever there's an issue on the board that any board member is uncomfortable with, it's pulled, and we you know, the staff will sit down and rework and reconfigure. And I'm known for rolling up my sleeves and drafting my own language. I recently proposed modifications to our strategic plan, which is about to be unveiled, probably adopted at our very next meeting. I actually did the research around the state, or around the country actually, and added a whole – we had four pillars. We now have – we're now going to have five. And the fifth one is fiscal accountability, fiscal business practices.
We'll get into more of the nuts and bolts and talk about the fifth pillar and some other educational items here as we continue our chat with the three contenders for Leon County School Board District 4. Political Perspectives all this month right here on WFSU. Our show today is focused on the Leon County School Board District 4, the three contenders there, Patrick Neil Cannon, Talligander III, and D.D. Rasmussen. A reminder that another program called Bandwagon will be coming to the TV waves a little bit later on. That'll be next month. The primary Bandwagon for Leon County is August 8th at 7 o'clock on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4. Primary Bandwagon number 2 is August 10th for Gadsden and Wakulla County races, also at 7 o'clock that evening on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. And your participation always welcome on Perspectives at 414-1234 or 800-926-8255. 8809. Yesterday we had District 2, the two-way race for the open seat. D. Crumpler saying, I've had it. I've got too much to do with the city of Tallahassee, and he no longer is going to be a part of the school board after this particular electoral cycle. But I ran this question by both of the contenders there, who are Roseanne Wood and Roger Penholster. That is, you know, the amount of discretion that local school boards have in a district has changed somewhat over the years as the state of Florida has gotten more and more involved with everything from standardized testing to curriculum development, any number of other things. So I wanted to go around the table and get some input from you folks when it comes to the simple question, how much power, how much discretion does a school board member have? And How do you reconcile what you'd like to do with what, whether it's state government mandate or the preferences of the independently elected superintendent? Do you have to affect those changes, Mr. Gaynor?
The reality of it is when you look at the national norm in a normal district, Leon County is still on that other side where we do have an elected superintendent. And the actual the majority of the country has an appointed superintendent by the school board. So comparative models when it comes to accountability and governance in Leon County, we have to kind of go back to a more of a traditional basis of this. I represent the people. I represent the parents and families. And sometimes the assumption says, no, I don't have a whole lot of power at all, but I do have the ability to translate and communicate what the people are desiring. And I think what I do feel that I can do as a school board member is be a better conduit for what is really being said by parents, and not just parents, but taxpayers. I mean, I think everyone participates in a vested interest in public schools. And I think if you can have a school board member that can truly galvanize and, translate those messages of hope and love, and then say, now let's see how this applies to policy. When a parent sees a child at a bus stop at 6 o'clock in the morning in the dark, you know, that's all they know is safety. How do we translate that? And I think as a good school board member, you have to have that ability to take information from the lowest levels, whatever, wherever they may be coming from, and be able to communicate them and then convert that language into something that is usable and also transferable, if you will. And I think that's what I'm hoping as a school board member I will be able to do is to be a strong conduit for that.
Okay, Patrick Cannon, same question for you. How much wiggle room do you have when it comes to all these other competing imperatives that you got to deal with there?
Well, when the state unfortunately mandates something, you have to follow it, and you can advocate on how to change that, I think, collectively as a school board and participating with the other 67 county school boards to make that statement whenever it comes to legislative changes. But I do believe the school board itself is the accountable aspect, the accountability to bring it out into the open, not so much to chastise or to complain or to nag, but to allow the open public to confirm whatever the elected superintendent does. So they're the ones, I think the school board is the ones that holds everything accountable, brings things to light in a way that allows for community participation and also to instill that trust in what is happening within our schools. That's one thing that I think that the school board itself is there for. It's the five people that approve things to make sure that it's in the best interest of the students and the best interest of the community as a whole.
Okay. Dede Rasmussen, you talked a little bit about that, the tap dance, if you will, that has to go on
right.
So that there doesn't – at least there can be disagreement, there can be discussion, there can be debate and all that thing, but not perhaps an armed insurrection in the middle of the school board meeting there. But still, you got a lot of things that we can't do anything about the Florida standardized testing regimen. That is mandated. It comes from the legislature. So – How else do you kind of work around the edges there to affect change within the district?
Well, to some degree, because of my legislative background, I'm a legislative liaison to the Florida School Boards Association. I participate in legislative hearings and monitor that. Obviously, I've not prevailed. I would much prefer that we have fewer tests and not so many. But I have seen some progress there. But notwithstanding whatever state mandates there are, there is a little bit of good news. The federal legislation, the reauthorization of the Federal Education Act is returning and restoring some home rule, a lot more discretion given back to the state and to the local government. That said, however, no matter what the mandates are, I think that I'll give you an example of something that I championed, which was to make a move toward age-appropriate start times. I've just been it appalls me that we start school, especially high school, at a time when we have mountains of research that shows that adolescent sleep patterns and adolescent brain development is not ideally receptive to information at 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning even. And so we've made some progress there. Now, mind you, I have to work within our budget limitations. I have to work with staff and principals of those high schools, and it takes at least 3 votes on the school board to get there. So it took a few years of really trying to push that through, and I think we're making slow but sure progress. So there are certainly ways, and we control the budget. If there are things that the board doesn't like. And I'm really proposing this year, I'm hoping that we can take some more time to really evaluate some targeted departments in a granular level and just to make sure that the classroom is our first priority. And I believe it is. But I want to have, as Patrick has pointed out, it might behoove the public to have a more public conversation so that they can see. We have, because of the way the trim notices are, we have multiple school board meetings and briefings about the budget. But I don't think people stay up at night to watch the school board. So perhaps we could do a better job of articulating that process and how we make those budget decisions.
All right. We have a call on the line at 414-1234, and Reed joins us. Hi, Reed. How's it going?
Pretty good. Tom, how are you?
I cannot complain at all, sir. What can we do you for?
Well, I got to tell you, first of all, you said it yesterday, the folks in District 2 are going to have a tough choice because it sounded like both those people knew exactly what they were talking about. I don't think the folks in District 4 have anything to worry about either based on what I'm hearing so far this morning.
Well, wonderful. And I see smiles all around the table, Reed. Thanks for the compliment there.
But your panelist did say something in regards to, you know, unfortunately, when the legislature mandates something, we have to follow it. You and I know, and most of Floridians, I think, who pay attention know, that our legislature has this strange tendency based on our Constitution to mandate by constitutional amendment rather than by statute. That, you know, when the issue is tough, they'd rather put it on the ballot. And we've had situations like when we passed the class size amendment, the very same ballot, we also passed an amendment which made it virtually impossible to adhere to the class size amendment. Now, how would a school board deal with such a contradiction?
That is a wonderful question. It gets us into some pretty esoteric philosophy, but there's I think some practicality behind that as well when it comes to, for instance, and I think, Mr. Gaynor, because we're going to start with you anyway, the idea that we need to have a well-funded and totally supported system of free and equal public education throughout Florida, which is also in the Constitution. But at the same time, we're going to set up a parallel and perhaps even conflicting system of education when it comes to such things as tax credit scholarships for private education, charter schools, which, although receiving public funding, are not subject to public school governance, those sorts of things. So you want to talk about that a little bit, what your thoughts are on it?
Well, I will say this, and I thank you, Reed, for calling in and definitely just having an ear for what we have to share about this particular time in our campaign and the school board race. But I want to go in and kind of be very specific about this. In District 4, with the current, our economics, the general status in terms of District 4, we have some of the greatest schools in District 4. I mean, all our schools pretty much got all A grades. You're talking about working mostly two-parent home families. You're talking about people with legislative, political, pastoral backgrounds. A lot of people in Leon County choose to live in District 4. And so when it comes to this type of conversation, here's where I'm most concerned about and what can I do as a school board member. What about that those families that are moving to District 4? What about this influx and growth that we've seen in District 4? Are we really providing a pathway for them to have a clear voice to where we can build some momentum? The one thing about the tax credit scholarship, they galvanized. They came together and there's initiative. There's an opt-out movement in terms of opt-out of testing. These people have intellectually worked together. You're going to need a school board member that can take people from every level of that bridge, because also in District 4, we have State Road 12. We have dirt roads. We have some other lower areas that maybe don't reflect what people may think about District 4, but those people have a voice as well. What we need to do, in when you say constitution, and I use the word cultural competency, if we can take in this county and begin to create small, I would call almost cell groups. We do this in our local church. We do home groups. We need a much more of a sustained momentum at the smallest levels so that one continual voice can continue to go throughout the year, not just during the legislative time, not just during campaign time, because this kind of dialogue really only happens every really 4 years or every couple of years as school board cycles out. But what if we had a school board member that was willing to stay on the ground and create a consistent messaging about testing, about constitutional rights because it all belongs to the people anyway. So let's make sure that you have someone in place that can magnify at the lowest levels and bring it to the highest levels. And I'm only saying that, Reed, is because what you're sharing is something that only makes sense to those that are in it every day. But what about that everyday mom and dad that's working right now that's not thinking about, they're thinking about what they're going to do with their kids for lunch or for their summer appointment? So I'm trying to be that person that can really say, you know what, I will do a better job at this current juncture as a school board member by working in the trenches with parents and families on a continual basis to translate and communicate a message that we can hopefully speak to constitutional laws and all that other stuff. And I'm saying that humbly, but I know it takes the people.
Okay, very good. Mr. Cannon, what do you think?
There's a lot of things that do get passed either by the voters or through the legislature, especially those tough decisions. And it does come across as contradictions, but it still provides a system for our schools to work within that requires funding. And it's that tough line that a school board has to follow. And if it's to the point where it is something extremely ridiculous, I do believe the people will take a stand and it will cause the legislatures, the elected officials to change. And with that understanding, you know, as the school board, what we have control over is our particular budget, our particular policies. And are those going to be in the best compliance with the state and at the absolute best for the students and everybody within the county? That's, I think, the key concept of the school board. And if we could all rise together, as I said earlier, get the 67 county school boards to all agree on one thing, because what's best for Leon County might not be best for Broward or Highlands. That's the frustration, I guess you could say. But my goal is to do what's best for our students, for our teachers, and for everybody who is in Leon County, because, you know, that's our foundation. That's what gives us our education, allows us to go to school, apply, you know, find our jobs, and have a sustainable life of income.
We called it before a tap dance. Maybe I should have said a tightrope. I don't know. Dee Rasmussen, any thoughts there for Reed and his question?
Well, thank you, Reed, for calling in. I think one of the challenges, a bigger challenge that might be facing us immediately, much like the classroom, the class size amendment, is the new the school choice legislation that just passed. It's also known as open enrollment, where basically a parent can say, I want my child to go to this school, and if there's capacity, we have to accept that child. That's going to be a really important reason to have strong leadership at the board that understands this policy. The board will be tasked with developing a policy that defines capacity. What that means is if a young student wants to come in, let's just say to Gilchrist Elementary School in kindergarten. If we allow that child to enter in kindergarten from another area, another county even, then we have to make sure that we have the capacity for that child to continue all the way through the fifth grade. And without precluding that seat for someone who might move into the district of the Gilchrist school zone. So this is going to be I think we can do it, but that's why it's going to take skill and experience and leadership to find our way through this particular new legislation. But my point in showing that as an example is to say legislation changes every single year. This year, the summary of state legislative changes affecting K-12 education in the state of Florida was 125 pages long. I'm talking a snippet of a paragraph summary for each change. So it is a constantly moving target. And I think that's one of the greatest challenges that our administrators and our teachers face is, if you can imagine, I always use the analogy of, if you're trying to throw a dart and hit the target right in the middle, but the target keeps moving every year. We've had so many times that it's change. So we're in a constantly evolving environment where we have to stay on top of it and ahead of it.
Let's go back to the phones. Cassandra is on line 3, and then we'll grab Leslie after the break here. Hi, Cassandra. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
I've heard a lot of good ideas of how parents can have a voice represented on the school board, and I'm wondering how, as a mom, with three children, 18 and under. How can we get students involved? How can we engage and empower students to be involved in our community?
Well, we have three parents around the table here. Let's randomize the response here. Let's start with you, Mr. Cannon, if we could.
Thank you. And, you know, the motivation of kids, you know, I look through my experience, and I had a unique experience, I think, through grade school than some others. I didn't really learn how to read until around the fourth grade, whenever they figured out that I had dyslexia. The school still administratively passed me. It was a rough time. And I had to play a lot of catch up once they figured out how to create that learning plan. Activities in school. I think it's something, you know, that teachers know how to focus on, because there was some very instrumental teachers through my education that allowed me to realize that I can accomplish a lot of things. And if we can find – and I know our teachers can. If the teachers can find that thing to keep them motivated, sometimes whether it's even recess in elementary school, I think that's the biggest aspect, because that's preschool, elementary school. That's the most developmentally big moment in a kid's life. And if that moment's, you know, squandered, you know, it's going to take a lot of time to catch up. So with talking with teachers – who are highly motivated, because, you know, teachers I don't feel get paid enough for what they do. They love kids. And then if they're able to find that motivation and keep and grow that motivation, whether it becomes sports, whether it becomes math club, whether it becomes chess, anything in those aspects that can keep them motivated. And it's finding that motivation.
We'll go around the table here for the other two candidates in regards to student and community involvement right after this rapidly upcoming break here on Political Perspectives on WFSU. You are always welcome to be a part of the proceedings at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, or zip us an email at perspectives@wfsu.com. We'll be right back. We are back on Political Perspectives, talking with Patrick Neil Cannon, Tally Gaynor III, and Dee Dee Rasmussen, the candidates for Leon County School Board District Number 4, which is in the northern part of the county, by the way, in case you don't have the district map spread out there in front of you. We were going on the community involvement question when it comes to student participation. Dee Dee Rasmussen, you're up next.
Well, this is actually one of my passions. I have advocated for a pedagogy, a teaching method called service learning, where students are engaged in community problem solving in order as a way of learning their course content. And I think that, and I think the research says that student engagement is the key to retention and graduation. So I've been a huge proponent of the arts and music, which, by the way, I have to give a plug for the Little Mermaid production at Leon High School this weekend and next weekend. If you're in town, you don't want to miss it. They do a phenomenal job. But our performing arts programs, I've fought to keep, especially when the funding for the seventh period day went away. And, you know, John Dewey once said that democracy has to be reborn in every generation, and education is its midwife. And the research shows that students who participate in service learning they learn critical thinking skills, they learn workforce development skills, they learn how to work together in a team. These are things employers need. And they're more likely to vote. They're more likely to join the Red Cross board one day. They're more likely to become engaged in a community. So I think it's our job to prepare a student for career and or college, certainly, but we have to prepare them to be active citizens. And that would be one of my big goals.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gaynor, that student-community link, forging that stronger, how do you do that?
Well, you know, I recently have been, you know, doing my research as well. And of course, personally, like I told you before, having four children and having an 18-year-old daughter that's graduating from Childs High School, and her when she went to high school as a gifted student, we had to make a difficult decision because the pressures they kept bringing to her about AP classes, and we had to opt out. I said, we would rather do dual enrollment and let her express herself in the arts. So my daughter began, since middle school, she was doing high school credit art classes. And so when she got to her senior year, her schedule wasn't overloaded with a lot of stressful man things that would more like discourage kids. It looks good on a resume. It looks good on a transcript. But when it come down to it, I was so excited to watch my daughter graduate, not just with honors, but also with an excitement about opportunities in life. She's now in Gainesville. She is pursuing her passion about pediatric psychology. But you know what? She says she now also wants to do art therapy along with it. But if it had not been for me working with her at that level to see what her core interests are and saying, how do we engage you but challenge you to grow? And then, as I said with my son, he came to the end of that cycle. From sixth grade and around seventh grade, he totally got disengaged. And when I looked at some fundamentals of why he got disengaged, and Dee Dee did allude to it, service learning is a component of it. But I would also speak to the level of student portfolio learning. I'm talking about students being able to have, because we're in an information society. And if you're teaching a particular subject, let's give that young person a chance to build their knowledge base from their own interests within the subject matter. And then let's measure them based upon that. Because the grading is what sometimes when a child sees an F, when a child sees that low grade based upon someone else's expectation and not necessarily connecting to their understanding of the world, which is so visible to them through media and internet, you get a disconnect. And so being able to have seen that personally, when you do stuff personally, it gives you another level of passion and connection, because my only goal now on the school board is to be able to translate the messaging and what I've seen working with 50 Large and working with schools like Success Academy and even Capital City High that served about 300 kids in a matter of 2 years who had previously fell between the cracks between 16 and 21. So I feel that I have some very key strategies to challenge and our young people, but also keep them engaged. Football and sports works well. They have some things, but what can we do better at the school board level? And I hope to do that.
All righty, sir. Leslie awaits here on line two on Political Perspectives. Hi, Leslie. Yeah, you still there, Leslie?
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I wanted to ask is if any of the candidates have given thought to the fact that Florida's school districts predominantly do not have a registered nurse in every school, or even the nationally supported ratio of one registered nurse for every 750 students. And we have many, many students who are not necessarily exceptional education students, but are simply students with 504 plans that have some pretty chronic and complex health conditions that really need healthcare management during the school day. And they are really left to the devices of health aides, and it is dangerous in some cases. And right now, the American Academy of Pediatrics just recently came out with an article that has been much touted in the media in the Central Florida area, where they state that they support a position of having a registered nurse in every school. Leon County, for the most part, there are health aides in the schools, not nurses.
I remember that great debate and discussion that happened several years ago when it came to diabetic students and insulin injections and all of that kind of thing. Mr. Gaynor, we'll start off with you on that one.
Well, I tell you, I want to thank you so much for calling in, Leslie. You kind of hit a passion point for me, because the reality of it is my wife's a registered nurse, and I had an amazing incident at Childs High School, over 2,000 students there, and my daughter was in a simple gymnastics class, and she hurt her neck. And for one, I didn't get a call right away, but then I did get a call from my daughter saying, Daddy, I hurt my neck and I'm in the clinic. And so, of course, assumingly so, coming from the other side of town because of the way we are in District 4, I was like, okay, well, you know, is the nurse or someone there to help assist you? And what is the status of your neck condition? She says, I don't know. It really hurts pretty bad. And so upon getting to the school and going into the clinic, which seemed my first question I said is, where is the nurse? Because my daughter's reported a neck injury, and you understand it's very sensitive mobility issues when dealing with neck injuries. And I was told by the person at the desk, we no longer have a nurse at this school. For one, as a parent, I was shocked. I probably should have been more in tune with that kind of decision and how it could be made kind of under the platform. And then when I began to say, when I asked my daughter, well, how did you know, what have they done? They said, this gave me an ice packet, but they kind of left it up to me. And when I took my daughter to the emergency room, she had a sprung neck. And when I look back at all the things that could have happened and could have definitely went wrong, it touched my heart because I said, why did this type of decision, you know, why are parents not really understanding the impact of not having a licensed registered nurse in a school with over 2,000? Some schools have 1,000 or 500 at elementary level. I really think as a school board member, this is a classic example that these are things, regardless of legislation, budgets or whatever, parents are willing to make the investment for things that make sense to them. And a registered nurse in every public school in Leon County, it only makes sense. And so I'm hoping to be a part of that movement.
Yeah, that's going to be, though, again, you can have anything you want as long as you can pay for it. We'll go to Dee Dee Rasmussen first and then you, Mr. Cannon.
Thank you, and I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the serious nature that you raise. I completely agree and understand, but I just would say this year, for example, our base student allocation went up $6. And we need a lot of things. We need more social workers. We need more guidance counselors. We need there's a group called Turnabout that's willing to put counselors in our schools to help students that are struggling with substance abuse issues. Thankfully, we have the partnership with the health department that helps alleviate some of this school nurse issue. We also have a great partnership with the Leon County Sheriff's Department where we have school resource deputies. But lately, the conversation has turned to, can we put an officer in every single school? So I'm not trying to be a naysayer here. I would love to have a nurse and a guidance counselor and a social worker and. Unfortunately, the way our budget is funded, though, is targeted at per student allocation for, you know, the basic elements of education, reading, writing, and arithmetic and testing. And so we've tried to do some creative things. We've tried some interesting partnerships. We're looking at a partnership, I think, now with the Florida, with FSU's medical school. We're opening a clinic at Rickards, which will serve the community also for dental and medical care. So we're looking at some interesting and creative partnerships to be able to do a lot of things that our budget does not anticipate. We also, we're fortunate to have the head of our law enforcement division I think he's even surprised himself. He's turned out to be a great grant writer. So he's secured funds that we didn't anticipate being able to have. I mean, these are not coming through the traditional streams of an education budget, but rather through Homeland Security. And so I'm pleased with what we've been able to do with the limited resources we have. Could we do more? Do I wish we could do more? Absolutely. And we will continue to look for ways to try to do that.
Okay, Mr. Cannon, any ideas you have to bring to this to try to get a little bit more responsiveness when it comes to whether it's medical or, you know, now we're talking also security and everything else. Some people, you know, want to put metal detectors in, you know, pre-K centers. I don't know. So what do you think?
It hits an interesting passion for me. My mother's a registered nurse. She was an ER nurse growing up as a kid, especially to a pretty exciting accident-prone son like myself. She retired from the state of Florida and wound up moving to Vermont. And I have had this discussion with her before, so it's almost like a deja vu coming from her standpoint because Vermont being a lot more of a rural state in that regards – She is the registered nurse for almost the whole northern end of the state, and she's a traveling nurse. So she will be moving to whichever area is kind of needed, but it also follows up on the certain procedures within that area of who's actually handling the clinic or qualified to handle the clinic. So, you know, it's interesting to look on how it's being done there, but – you know, one of the things is if there's a kid with special needs or somebody with an EpiPen or somebody that has diabetes, unfortunately in that state they've had to put it on who's the caretaker that's going to have to be provided by the individual. If there's there was one case where the insurance company for the individual was able to cover something like that. So there's a lot of options, and I think where Dee Dee has mentioned there's partnerships. That's where the community can come together. Provide that extra areas. But, you know, I agree. We definitely should maximize every dollar and every aspect. And, you know, it is surprising that we don't have student nurses – or not student nurses, but registered nurses in every school. But I feel that frustration of the penny pinching. And if that could be – I feel budgetarily more accountable in that aspect, we could possibly find extra funds.
I remember – God, am I dating myself here too – when schools would pick up the tab for field trips. Mm-hmm. And now it
and
all has
uniforms
to
– And football
exactly.
uniforms.
Yeah, it mm-hmm. all came from the school. And if we were a little bit deficient, hey, we have a bake sale. It's no big deal. But things have just gotten so incredibly expensive. Folks, time has really flown here during the past hour. And I want to give you an opportunity to summate your best case for why the voters should turn to you when it comes to the Leon School Board District 4 race. And if we could do this in just about a minute and a smidge. Mr. Gaynor, if you could give us your best case, sir.
Tally Gaynor, my slogan is Tally for Students. I think fundamentally all I would like to say is that parents, our children are our greatest investment that we put in public schools. And I feel that a time has come in which a school board member must be willing to stand not just on the end of legislation and policy, but on this arm in arm with parents that are in the trenches every day with our children. And I feel that as that person, Tally Gaynor III for Leon County School Board District 4, I can be that person to stand with parents side by side, children in the trenches, and make a change for our future. And it is going to be a challenge, and I'm up to it.
Appreciate that, sir. Patrick Neil Cannon, your turn.
Yes, and I'm looking to bring forward, the fiscal accountability, not in a nagging way, but in to bring it into more open transition for everybody to see. And I think that key aspect enables the trust that I think has left the school board in that regards. Less testing and more education. We do have our mandated standardized tests. But, all the pre-testing in order to get ready for the test, I think, could be handled better or eliminated. I believe it's called progress monitoring. And it was, I think, designed initially to be a good thing, but it's also created, I think, another monster that takes away from the main activities of the reading, writing, and learning instead of which answer to pick that best suits the question. The other thing is also, utilizing all resources for our students with disabilities or special needs. They're just as important as everyone else. And that's always been a strong passion that I've had. And competitive pay for our teachers. I believe there's 20 Title I schools. Some of the incentives, the biggest one is you work there for a number of years, your student loans get paid off. They're there, they're gone. And just maybe we could make that a little longer. What can we do to provide more incentives there? There's a lot of things challenging this school board, but my number one thing is the fiscal accountability. Opening this up for discussion, more involvement to where anybody can immediately go to it, find it, question it, and us as school board members have the answer to it. Instead of relying on, the superintendent or the staff of superintendents, where we can be comfortable to answer any question to anyone in regards to where that goes to. And that's my process. I hope I didn't go over my minute.
Very good, sir. Okay. And Dee Dee Rasmussen, we wind up with you.
Thank you so much. Well, first of all, I appreciate the time. I guess I should mention I have been endorsed by the Leon County Teachers Association and the Leon County Board of Realtors. What I've championed is keeping the classroom first with fiscally conservative accountability to the taxpayers. I've championed the transparency and fiscal stewardship back to the fifth pillar I've drafted, which I think will be adopted at the next meeting. I've pushed for age-appropriate start times and reasonable but not onerous accountability measures and high-stakes testing, seventh period day to keep arts and PE in our classrooms and for grade recovery. Teacher compensation and support, I think we gave the biggest raise in a long time this past year because we were finally able to get our teachers up to at least a reasonable compensation level. And I hate that there are so many sticks and not enough carrots for our teachers. I think teacher morale right now is potentially problematic, and we're trying to do everything we can at the board to restore faith in the district while bragging about our teachers and bragging about our students. Every day, those school buses still run. Those teachers still teach. Our graduates still graduate. Our students are still learning. They're doing great. I don't like the test, but if you have to have them, our students outperform the state average on 22 of the 23 state tests areas, including language arts, social studies, math, science, and so forth. And so, we remain one of the highest performing districts in the state, and I'm proud of it, and I'm happy to continue to serve. And in this case, I do think experience matters. I mean, we are running $500 million business with 50, if you look at it as headquarters and 50 plants, it is that. And so I hope to continue to give my passion toward students and parents while looking for and taking care of the business operations. I'm hoping that we will – I'm proposing soon that we will go after the Sterling Award and the Baldrige Standard so that we can restore that public trust and accountability to the taxpayers.
Thank you, ma'am. Echoing what our friend Mr. Mahoney said earlier in this conversation, I think the voters in the district have a lot to mull over, a lot of qualifications and good skill sets being brought to this position. So Patrick Neil Cannon, Tally Gaynor III, D.D. Rasmussen, thank you all for coming on Political
Thanks
Perspectives
for
today.
Us. Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. On the radio side, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls, and providing video support for 4FSU, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Becca Alvis, Jason Ramsamer, Paul Delva, Frankie Verdesia, Esther Somersell, and Rick Patricus. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we continue our political perspective, starting off Monday with the race for Tallahassee City Commission Seat 1. We'll reconnect then, right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.